The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this evening's talk is on the hindrance of restlessness and worry. And the hindrances is a particular list that we use in Buddhism to refer to some of them, but not necessarily all. But some of the key mental forces that come into play that make it very hard for us to be settled, very hard for us to get concentrated, very hard to see clearly what's happening, very hard to be mindful. And anybody who practices mindfulness meditation needs to kind of come to terms with these five forces, needs to understand them well, needs to learn how to work with them, and hopefully learns to overcome them so they don't have their hindering effect on our lives. And these five are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and then doubt, the five categories. And the fourth category, which is today, is that of restlessness and worry, restlessness and regret. And in some ways, it's the hindrance which seems that meditation is most directly designed to help with, because meditation is meant to be calming and settling and stabilizing. And so meditation itself can be very helpful. But what do we do when meditating is not helping, because restlessness and anxiety has the upper hand? And sometimes sitting down to meditate can feel like you're at the rodeo. And in fact, I remember many years ago, one meditation teacher gave a talk, and he said, occasionally, a very successful meditation is the sign that it was a successful meditation. Everybody listens carefully. What's that? You know, how am I going to know what's a successful meditation? The sign of it is that you didn't get up out of your seat. Because sometimes it can feel like the rodeo, he said. It's wild energies, restless energies. The legs can feel like this bolting energy where you would dash for the door. The mind can be so incredibly restless, and sometimes it's really amazing what the restless mind will do. Sitting quietly, meditating, everything's nice and wonderful, maybe, and then, or not, and then it suddenly becomes imperative to defrost the freezer. Now. And then, I've heard of people who have went, excuse me for my throat, who have went boy, who have gone to sit down to meditate, try again. So I've known people who have gone to sit down to meditate and felt very quickly they have to get up and do something. And then sat down and then felt they had to get up to get a better seat, to arrange themselves better. And then sat down, and then something else, and this and that. And by the time their meditation alarm goes off, they finally manage to sit down, be still for a minute. So that's maybe an extreme version. And it can be that the mind is so busy thinking about something, so concerned about something, or so jumping around with things, that there's no effective ability to get focused, concentrated, and settled. Sometimes it's called monkey mind, and maybe any of you heard that. Maybe you don't know why it's called monkey mind. Classically, it's said that a monkey will, when it grabs for one branch as it's swinging through the trees, and then immediately it grabs for the next branch and then next branch. So monkey mind is a mind that thinks one thing and immediately grabs for the next thought and the next thought, often. Maybe even different topics of thinking, just kind of jumps around a lot, not settled. And what's very interesting about restlessness is that there are different levels of it. or intensities of it. And that that can be the most obvious, where it's, you know, it's clear that you're restless, you're really agitated about something, and you can hardly sit still, and, you know, for whatever reason. And then there's, but there's also very, very subtle restlessness. And it's said in Buddhism that until you get completely enlightened, completely, not even partially, but completely, there will be some movement of restlessness in your mind going on. And even at times when your mind is very still and very quiet, if you're super sensitive or super mindful to see what's going on in your mind, you see it, still there's a little kind of jumping around in the mind. Even the subtlest movement to want to think about something, you can feel that as a movement away from stability. It's kind of like you can be very, very, very settled in your mind, very peaceful. And some thought arises, and it's almost like the mind reaches up to grab that, or reaches to get involved. And that movement is agitating. It's like you have a really, really still pond, lake of water. It's pretty still. And as long as there's any kind of ripples, you can't see your reflection. And so even the subtlest little movement of the mind can create a ripple, so you can't see completely clearly. So it's both, it can be very gross and can be very subtle. And so because of that, it's something that's hopefully interesting for everyone to study and get interested in and to become discerning. It's said that one of the very important aspects of restlessness and worry is to learn to recognize it, see that it's there. And because one of the wonderful qualities of restlessness is that sometimes it can camouflage itself. We can be so restless about something that we don't even notice that we're restless. This kind of self-perpetuating kind of movement, going for things. It can also be very uncomfortable, restlessness, when it's very strong. And the very discomfort of being restless creates more restlessness. Or the discomfort of restlessness creates an outward looking. What can I do to fix this? What can I do to settle this? How can I get it, kind of do something? So the challenge in restlessness is how to turn towards it and be present for it and engage it. So I'd like to offer you a variety of ways to engage restlessness, to be present for it. One has nothing to do with meditation at all, but it's a whole category of things which has to do with learning and reflecting, contemplating what the nature of your restlessness is. Because sometimes it's better done outside of meditation. So there might be some really good cause for you to be restless. And so there might be some reason. So maybe you haven't paid your taxes in 10 years. And you hear the government needs some money. So, you're a little bit concerned. And so, you realize, oh, and then you heard, oh, meditation. Meditation can help you calm you down. That's what I need. No, you don't need meditation. You need to pay your taxes. You don't use meditation to run away from the real issues of your life. That would be a terrible mistake. So sometimes what's needed is to really kind of look and understand, are there causes and reasons for being restless? The other half of this hindrance is worry. And actually the classic word is not worry, it's regret. Because in the ancient tradition, this was defined, regret was defined as regret, being agitated because of regretting what you did and didn't do in the past. And that's certainly understandable. But here in the modern world, it seems like a lot of people can have agitation and worry about nothing to do with the past, but about what might happen in the future. And so that seems almost a bigger issue for many people here in the West, in America, than regret sometimes. So we've expanded it to include worry. And worry can also include regret about the past. Worry that you're going to be caught. IRS is going to catch up, or the equivalent. So sometimes it has to do with our behavior in the past. Sometimes it's been an unethical thing we've done or have hurt someone. And sometimes if we notice that, we need to go back and make some kind of amends, ask for forgiveness. And again, it doesn't make sense just to calm yourself down so that you can just avoid making amends, avoid saying sorry to someone. That doesn't make any sense. I'm fond of AA, where they spend a whole step in AA is to go back and make a moral inventory. And you go over your life and see, you know, is there anything in your life that you regret having done that's still kind of unfinished? And I think it's a really wise thing for people who are serious about meditation to do something like that, because otherwise these past regrets sooner or later will come into play, will kick in. It's a funny way in which when the mind gets stiller and stiller and stiller, there's a way in which it kind of dislodges. The concentration of meditation will dislodge the unfinished, unresolved issues of our life, many of them. And some people are trying to, again, use meditation to avoid the uncomfortable aspects of their life. But it's really necessary sometimes to turn towards those things and deal with them. And meditation shouldn't be the solution. It shouldn't be the escape. Sometimes there's other things in the world we need to think about, that reflect about why we're agitated. There might be some beliefs we hold that are not tenable in this world. Perhaps we have a certain belief that our new president is going to solve all our problems. And so that's not a belief system that's going to create a calm, relaxed state of mind. It's not going to, you know. Or there's a belief that somewhere in the world, some way or other, you can have absolute security when nothing bad will ever happen to you. You know, that's that belief system. If you hold that really tightly, it's going to make you very agitated. Or you might have a very tightly held idea of self. You know, this is who I need to be. My identity is deeply tied to being anything, but to being a compassionate, kind person, deeply connected to being someone who's always employed, has a certain job, has certain prestige, has certain recognition, being smart, being something. And when you have yourself, you know, always a certain kind of way, the reality doesn't really support that very much. There's always someone who's going to be smarter and kinder and more compassionate. And then there's always going to be times where you can't figure it out, or you can't be kind enough, or you're going to be snap at someone or do something. And so if we're trying to maintain and hold on to a very tight identity, it tends to make people relatively fragile. And so sometimes we need to address the deep-held identity that we have, the way we hold ourselves and think about ourselves. And unless we address that, it's going to keep us from being able to settle, be calm. So, reflections. And the other thing to reflect on is some way in which we live our life, which is restless producing. I've seen in my life that certain activities tend to create, make me more restless than more settled. There are a few times where I've watched television. Sometimes I've noticed, maybe because I don't watch it very much, I feel kind of agitated afterwards. And maybe some of you have built up that television muscle and you don't have the fortitude and the capacity of sitting there calm and upright and straight and, you know, stable and just watch that tube, and it doesn't move you at all. I haven't really gotten that. And it isn't that I'm, you know, troubled by what I see, but the flickering somehow. I noticed that sometimes spending too much time on my computer, too many hours, emails, that I don't think there's any particular attachments, you know, that I have that to deal with, or identity issues I have to deal with. But it's just somehow that activity seems to kind of makes my mind kind of agitated. And so then I have to find some way to settle that agitation. And often meditation helps for me, but still there's the kind of feel this agitated quality. Not getting enough exercise is another way. Or for some people, I know for me, sometimes not getting enough sleep. I get kind of restless, and I guess it's restless energy sometimes in my body. Rather than being more settled or more tired or drained, sometimes I get more agitated. So there might be things we need to look at in our lives. And that kind of looking at our lives is best done outside of meditation. So if in meditation restlessness and regrets, worries, is a regular visitor for you, comes a lot, you might take some time and think about what's going on. Talk to a friend, talk to a teacher, kind of explore what's happening here, that what might be helpful to address. And then there's what to do in meditation itself. And now restlessness can be really fun in meditation sometimes. I hope that some of you, or all of you, if you have, you'll have a good bout of restlessness where you really enjoy it. And I mean, sometimes it's a drag and it's not enjoyable at all. But so I'll offer you the what I've learned a few times where I've really thought this is pretty cool. And that is to feel the restlessness in the body. So rather than thinking about the issues I'm restless about or the feel it, you know, to feel it physically, energetically. And close my eyes and just imagine my whole body is a container for the energy. And then just let the energy bounce around. You know, and like a ping pong ball. You know, and the legs want to do this and want to bolt and the arms want to move. And, you know, sometimes it's just been so much fun just, you know, feeling all this energy kind of rushing around. And then eventually if I kind of, if I'm not bothered by it, but just make space for it and just let it be there, it kind of seems to settle itself. But if I'm upset with it and trying to stop it or block it or do something with it, sometimes that can make me more agitated. So to kind of get out of the way, just kind of open up, have awareness be really, really big. Some people can imagine that their awareness that holds the restlessness is bigger than the room, or as big as the room, or bigger than the room. And then because it's so big, it can contain the restlessness. It's like three bouncing balls bouncing around a lot inside a teeny little box. It's going to not much space inside the box for anything else to happen. It's just going to feel like a lot. But if you take those same three little bouncing balls and put them in this big room here, it's not going to be a big deal. So if you can imagine that your awareness is as big as bigger than the restlessness, some people find that very helpful. And the restlessness comes a chance to settle inside that bigger space. Some people find that concentration is really the key to settling restlessness. And this takes discipline. And to sit and be very focused, really use your attention to stay really centered on one thing. Sometimes when people do mindfulness practice, they're not so centered. They're paying attention to different things. Their attention is bouncing around. And so to just say, okay, for the next 10 minutes, I'm just going to focus completely on my breathing and not let my attention waver. I'm going to count my breath. Just keep it in one place. And sometimes when all the attention, all the energy of attention goes towards one thing, there's not much, you know, kind of you pour it into one thing, then there's not much energy left to feed the restlessness. And sometimes the restlessness can settle down because the energy doesn't go there. Another thing that can be helpful is to feel whatever the emotion that might be that's behind the restlessness. Sometimes restlessness is a symptom of frustration. And that's why we're restless. Or sometimes it might be a symptom of confusion. Or it might be a symptom of fear, anxiety. So rather than feeling the restlessness per se, is to drop down, see what is more the emotion that seems to be part of the restlessness. And then once you feel the emotion, it's again very helpful to drop into your body and let your body hold that emotion. And enter into that world of that emotion with mindfulness. And the mindfulness can kind of sometimes settle the issues, and then the restlessness can settle itself. Another thing that can be helpful is to value calm. Sometimes I've been restless, and then I remember, calm. That's a good thing. and then just remembering what a good thing it is, I could kind of search through my mind, or see where is there calm? Is there a possibility of calm here? And sometimes just evoking it and thinking about it, I can just settle my mind. But if I don't value it and think about it, I can stay restless. And there have been times when I've tried to deal with restlessness, where I've kind of just kind of dealt with it directly, and it hasn't been so effective. But if I just kind of evoke calm, think about calm, sometimes that becomes available, and that can kind of settle the whole thing. A couple of more things to say. The things that occur to me today don't have to do with meditation per se. It can be very helpful to cultivate contentment. If restlessness is an issue, some people find that it's helpful to actively reflect and think about or cultivate being content. We live in a restless society because many people are not content with what they have. They always want more and more and more. And so to cultivate contentment with what we have is one way to settle restlessness for some people. And it's considered to be one of the great supports of meditation practice in Buddhism is to cultivate contentment. Not the kind of contentment that just kind of lets you be content with your suffering, but the kind of contentment that keeps you from always incessantly wanting more and more and more of everything. And then if restlessness is a really big issue in life for you, then it's helpful to, sometimes it can be helpful to have a disciplined life. So to have a scheduled life. So you're not always doing a lot of different things all the time, but you have a regular routine that you follow, a regular time of day that you meditate, time that you exercise, time that you eat, and having a regular routine that you kind of settle into can support some people so their restlessness doesn't have the upper hand. And finally, a classic Buddhist instruction for restless people is to cultivate friendships with people who are calm. Instead of, being with people who are restless. So that's restlessness, and a lot of the same things apply to worry. Worry has a little bit different things to explore, and that is sometimes we can question what we're worrying about. Usually it has to do with belief system and ideas. So we can question that, or we can learn to turn our attention away from what we're anxious about and feel how it is to be anxious. So this is a very important movement I've already talked about, but very important movement working with all the hindrances is to learn to turn the attention away from what it's focused on objectively. I'm anxious about the IRS. I'm anxious about something. And turn the attention 180 degrees and feel what it's like to be anxious, what it's like to worry. And that can be very powerful because it can take the power away from the object of things we're concerned about. So it's turning around and feeling and being present and then letting things settle. So, the hindrance of restlessness, of anxiety. It's a good one. And so now it's your turn. We have about 10 minutes. And do you have any things you want to ask about what I've said or about restlessness and anxiety? Or, people are restless to ask. Yes.
Is there a connection between physical pain and restlessness? Like, is that sort of physical is that a manifestation of restlessness?
Sure. I think that if there's a lot of pain, there's a there's almost a physical basis for getting restless. A lot of energy and that can come out of that. And so sometimes it's not good to sit with pain if you can avoid it. Some people have health conditions where it's very hard, but chronic pain can be agitating. Meditation can be an antidote to it, and it's possible to do things that can settle that, both in meditation or elsewhere. And becoming skilled at meditation, you can settle some of the deleterious effects that pain can have, some of the side effects that it has. I've sat with intense pain and been very, very peaceful. And I've sat with intense pain and been very restless. And meditation has helped me to sit with pain. And I think that so some of the reactive modes that we come into play around pain get settled. If it's a chronic health kind of issue, you want to be very careful that you're not pushing the pain or sitting with pain in some kind of stoic way. So then trying to find other ways of sitting that are more settling. Does that address your concern?
Partly. That's definitely one aspect, but the other thing I was wondering about is that maybe restlessness actually manifests as
pain?
Discomfort.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Sometimes the mind can your mind is a genius sometimes in getting you not to pay attention. And sometimes the body will kick up pain, discomfort, as a way of trying to distract you from what's really going on. So yeah, it can happen.
A little one. Contentment, what flavor is that? What Pali word is that you're using for contentment?
The Pali word? I don't know. I'm not quite sure if I remember it, but something like santuti.
You tantalized me by saying my big issue in my life a couple of times, and then you're going on, and I want to hear what you made me say more. Regret.
Regret.
Coulda, shoulda, woulda, and if I look at it intellectually, of course you're so stupid. But it doesn't help.
Well, I feel a little bit reluctant to kind of to say much because. There's so much behind what you said. I mean, it's obviously a big issue. There's so many reasons or causes or streams that feed into that regret that you have, that if I say something, I might not, address your concern. But one of the things that occurs to me is that there's a beautiful practice in mindfulness of tracking our emotional life, which means this, that there's almost like there's layers of emotionality. So if you sit very still, someone sits very still, for example, with restlessness, just feel the restlessness. As you stay there present, after a while, in the cracks of the restlessness, you see that the real issue is not restlessness, but is regret. And sometimes it morphs into maybe a regret. Then you stay very present for regret. Stay there. You don't try to look below it. Just stay very, very present. And allow it to be there. Allow it to unfold as it wants to unfold. And then it might morph into anger. And then the person would feel the anger. Do the same thing there. Just be with the anger. Feel it. Let it be in the body. Don't try to get away from it. Just hold it there in a respectful way. And then that anger might morph into sadness. And then you stay with the sadness. And each of these, it's like a layer going deep down. And then you stay with the sadness. And perhaps a sadness has to do with some deeper fear. And then all of a sudden you might realize that you're afraid of losing your parents' love. And the sadness was because you did. And the anger was the rage of not having it. And the regret, was not knowing what to do with all that anger and all that pain and all that stuff. So it's not analysis. It's not going back and trying to understand what happened, but it's staying very much in the present moment. And then, as you're staying very, very present, these things begin showing themselves, but they begin to kind of open themselves, or unfold. So it might be for you very interesting to learn to do that. Sit really still, very respectful at each different layer. So it starts with the regret, and forget about it. It has nothing to do with what you're thinking about. Any story you have of being regretful, forget about the story for this exercise, and just stay in your body and stay with the feeling. Make lots of space and permission for it to be there, like the emotion has never had a chance to be in the sun before, and it finally has a chance. This is a chance, and you're going to allow it to finally be in the sun, and kind of it has permission to be there, and then see what happens as you give it permission to be there. And just allow things to unfold and unfold. That's one approach. Sounds great? Yeah, it's really...
It turns me away from the intellectual thing that I mentioned.
Yeah.
That's not
going to
help.
That's not going to help, yeah. So that's just... that. There's lots more that could say, but that would be distracting now from this one instruction. Yes?
By the way, don't regret not being heard. Turn on the microphone.
Thanks, Gil. This is probably an issue that strikes home quite well for me.
I think I struggle with restlessness since I got up and got a glass of water
in the middle of your your talk. I think for me, often expect, eventually I'll grow up, and eventually, because be settled, that it will finally get centered and be
just on its own from maturity,
as a factor of maturity, that with each moment that I'm older, another moment that I'm able to be here.
So you're relatively on the young end of the people in the room here, and there's some people here relatively on the older end. Some of the relatively older ones want to say something? Is that how it works?
Don't hold me.
So please, I'm sorry.
No, I guess the focus of my question is about... actually, another state of mind, something that may or may not have been something that other people have experienced with, but attention deficit disorder earlier in your life and
figuring out from that how to get beyond it
and to be in a
useful
state where you're actually able to stay with a thought for an extended period and just be there.
Mm. That's an interesting topic. I think, anytime there's some kind of challenge, and I guess suppose that attention deficit would be a challenge, but there can be health issues, there can be, personal, psychological issues that go on, all kinds of stuff. A very important area for mindfulness practice is what is our relationship to that issue? Because sometimes if we relate to it as if it's a problem, relate to it as a bad, I'm bad because I have it, I have to get rid of this, I have to fix it, just that way, that relating will make us restless. And so if you have attention deficit disorder, which, can have its challenges to have a life that way, Are you getting more restless, more anxious about it, more upset, more, you're suffering more about it because you're relating to it as a bad thing? And so you need to look at the way you're relating to it. I read an article earlier this year in The Economist that pointed out that in hunter-gatherer society, a much higher percentage of people have, I think it was at attention deficit disorder than in non-hunter-gatherer society. And the feeling was that to call it a disorder, when it was like 20% of the population had it in these hunter-gatherer society, to call it a disorder was a mistake. And that actually, back in hunter-gatherer times, it was actually very helpful for society, tribes, to have people with that had that kind of. It was a gift. Attention deficit disorder came. It was also considered a kind of a gift. It allows you to kind of keep looking and keep searching, keep hunting, and keep all your senses open. It's really useful out there, you know, in the wild. It's just that nowadays we have a different culture and society. And so now, in this particular society, it's defined as a disorder, but in a different society, it's, you know, it's relative. Anyway, so I'm trying to say all this, our relationship to it is a very important part. Now, I know that there are at least two wonderfully profound and mature meditation teachers in our tradition who have attention deficit disorder. And they've managed successfully to practice with their particular condition. And one of them has told me that one of them says that in his kind of situation, he's the kind of attention deficit person who can compensate by being super concentrated, kind of lock in somehow. That's his ability, so he can do that. But to take care of things in daily life without that kind of locked in attention, that locked in attention helps him in meditation. The other one doesn't have that ability at all. And he says, I just do my meditation in small spurts. And, you know, like most of us, right? Most of us have attention deficit, so. he can get focused for maybe a couple of minutes or something, and then his mind wanders off, and then he gets focused. And he actually has, he's had a very profound, deep meditation practice using his mind that way. But he's not bothered by it. Both of these people have learned how to use the mind they have, rather than thinking, you know, I can't do it because I have this kind of mind. And I think that's one of the signs of maturity. Not necessarily you're settled organically as you get older, but rather that we learn to work with our own limitations and not let them be limiting. So I hope that addressed your concern well enough. So one more here, Rainbow.
I wondered why this was one of the topics that you suggested we spend time looking at off the cushion. I almost never hear you suggest things that we do. You sort of look at a situation when we're away from meditation.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that with all the hindrances, it's good to, it's really good to live a reflective life. And sometimes, if you're only talking about it, in mindfulness meditation, you're not supposed to reflect about things. And so sometimes people get the idea, if they only listen to a mindfulness meditation teacher, that they're not supposed to reflect. Just be supposed to be present. And I think that it's a really healthy and a part of a mature, rich, you know, responsible life is to spend time in quality contemplation. And so going for a walk and thinking and think about things, going with a friend and exploring things, talking about some issues with a friend in some useful way, sitting and having a cup of tea, journaling. There's some way in which we actually can contemplate, think, reflect, reason for things, I think is one of the important ways to understand our life and to clarify our life, and it has its place. And if you can do it in a quality way, some place in your life, then hopefully you're less likely to try to do that in meditation. So, I hope that you didn't get too restless listening to a talk on restlessness. And if you did, I hope you were listening. So thank you. And then next week we have our last hindrance, and the hindrance of doubt. And they say that that's the most dangerous hindrance of them all. So come prepared. Thank you.